organic as food for home. During the shelter in place, people were all of a sudden eating 3 meals a day, 7 days a week in the home. So there was a huge surge in demand for organic products. Whenever there's an issue directly related or indirectly related, if it's in that space of health and wellness, people want to eat organic food. In the midst of the pandemic, not that anybody's out there claiming that organic cures COVID-19, but if you're thinking about your health and you're paying attention to it and you're wanting to support your immune system and food, people will select organic. And when that is on people's mind, they are gravitating to organic foods.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Laura Batcha, I don't have an opportunity anymore to sit down and visit with the CEO and Executive Director of the Organic Trade Association. And Laura, this is especially interesting time to visit with you because you just got done with a virtual annual meeting. And I've had the pleasure of going to your annual meetings in the past, and I've enjoyed them. I mean, you had exhibits, you had speakers, you had people milling around, and I got invited to the parties sometimes and have a glass of wine and some appetizers, all organic appetizers and organic wine. So it's different. How was it? I mean, you had to have people meeting and doing the business of the association virtually. How'd that go?
Well, nice to speak with you as well, Roger. It's fun to get a chance to connect. We did have the virtual annual meeting yesterday, and I think given the circumstances that we can't be together in person, it was really a tremendous success. We had about 640 of our members registered to attend the virtual annual meeting, and we had all of our board and additional guests and speakers, and we did a data release. So, you know, we experimented with some new things in technology, knowing that people are getting a bit of Zoom fatigue these days from being on their video cameras in their home offices. But it was really engaging and conversational, and we had just torrent of questions in from the membership. We spent, you know, over half an hour in questions Q&A with our board at the end of the meeting and just barely scratched the surface on it. So, you know, today's staff is, we have a commitment to answering every member's question. So we're just pouring through all the questions. But I think, you know, all in all, given the circumstances, you know, we rose to the occasion. And I think our members really appreciated being able to be in community, even if virtual this year.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've heard some people think that in some ways it's even better. You're getting that conversation going and you're getting people to be able to send you notes. I mean, you know, it's kind of a big deal when you're in a live meeting, an in-person meeting, I should say, and you have to have somebody kind of like walking around and handing out little cards and taking them up, and you can kind of be sitting there and watching people post comments. And so I would imagine more of the 600 felt like it was able for them to express themselves and get some feedback, even more so than maybe if they were in person, because in person, there's a certain percentage of them don't necessarily like to take up the time and go stand at the microphone to ask a question or hand a note in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a good amount of live engagement. And I think, you know, we recognized our Organic Leadership Award winners this year, 3 farmers from different parts of the country. And normally they come to the podium and give a speech, but this year we got to see from them via video, be in their fields and in their barns. And so that was kind of cool too. So we got to go out to the field from the annual meeting.
Did you have to send somebody out there? Or did you have these guys get somebody in their family, take their iPhones out and catch them?
Yeah, absolutely. They did the videos themselves. So, you know, these days, I think we've all gotten a little bit better at technology and in video over the last few months.
That's exciting. I think the other thing too, one more thing about this virtual idea, is that it's never easy for people to go a long distance for these meetings. You could look at the carbon that's spent, you know, when you're flying to and
absolutely
from across the country. And so the environmental impact, but more than that, you know, those 600 people probably could have averaged spending $1,000 each to have attended your meeting. That's $600,000 that, sadly, it doesn't help the airline industry or the hotel business or the restaurants, sadly. But on the other hand, that $600,000 they weren't having to spend and still supporting their association.
Yeah, you know, it's important for people to gather together. And, you know, there'll be a time when we're back in Washington for our fly-in or we're back at trade shows seeing each other. But, you know, we're already having conversations, you know, as early as today. And tomorrow we'll continue that with the board of directors about, you know, what did we learn from doing this virtually? And I think, you know, there is, you know, with the cost comes accessibility, and can we have a more diverse group of our membership participate by doing it virtually? Mm-hmm. And anytime you pick one physical event to have the annual meeting at, you end up with, again, that sub-segment of the membership that's at that type of event. So I think, you know, we also did a little poll at the beginning to see who was on the call and what part of the value chain they were from. And I think it also gives us an opportunity to really have the most diverse gathering of our membership. So, you know, I suspect there'll be things that we learned from doing this that even when we're all back on airplanes and those types of things, we'll continue with. It was really quite fun.
Yeah. So in setting up for this meeting, you must have gotten out to your members and saying, these are the kinds of things we're going to be talking about. And you bring them news, you honor some people. I don't know, do you take some votes on some, were there any votes taken? Did you have committees making recommendations and voting by people online?
We didn't have any votes this year on the annual meeting. Typically, we do our bylaws votes and membership votes in conjunction with our annual board of directors election. Those ballots get mailed out and they're available electronically to the membership. So we usually package everything once a year. And then at the annual meeting, we unveil the results of the votes. So again, we've tended to not do the votes during the annual meeting live, because in person, you end up with just a subsection of the membership and not the diverse membership. So when we vote, we go out to everybody and we give everybody a opportunity to vote, not just the folks that are in attendance. But from a association business perspective, we announced our new board members that have been elected this year. We have a Democratic election every year. A lot of people don't know this because it's not common in sort of trade associations. Typically, our board is elected by the membership, one member, one vote. So whether or not you're a single owner operator dairy farm in Central Ohio, or you're a publicly traded CPG company, each member gets one vote for the board of directors slate. So we greeted five new board members at the meeting, and we do a finance report, that sort of pro forma business association. But we also unveiled our annual industry survey, which is our data package on what happened in the marketplace in 2019. And because, you know, we're in a whole new world since the COVID pandemic, we also released a COVID supplement to that data pack that gave a snapshot of where the market is at now. So we featured that in the annual meeting, and then we had some discussion groups on some of the top priorities that the association's working on, particularly climate change and how we engage as an association. We have a board task force working on that right now to establish some principles and criteria for evaluating climate policies as they begin to come forward through Congress. So we presented that to the membership and then talked about primary topic that we're engaged in that we're going to be working on for, we think, the next couple of years, which is evolving the public-private partnership within organic. How do private stakeholders and industry engage with the Department of Agriculture on the development of organic standards? How do we get continuous improvement to happen more quickly within the regulations? How do we get USDA to be more responsive? So that's a big priority for us. So we had a discussion on that topic as well.
You know, that's interesting, because I'm still stuck on something you said a few minutes ago, back on who you are and your members of the Organic Trade Association, and you are a nonprofit trade association, and you're trying to promote and protect the organic industry. What's unique, and it really hasn't caught with me before you just said it a few minutes ago, is that it's really one person, one vote. And because I think one of the criticisms people have of industry-wide groups, or maybe is a fear, is that sometimes the farmers, individual farmers, feel like big corporations throw their weight around and they have a hard time measuring up. And you hear those complaints about many different associations. But I'm just struck by what you said. So if I'm a farmer in Peoria County, Illinois, and I have organic and I join your association, I have as much say as if I'm the CEO of
General Mills. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know anybody else that does that, Laura. Do you?
It's very unique in trade associations, Roger. And you've been around agriculture groups and trade associations a long time. You know, it's really, we're unique in a number of ways. That is absolutely unique. The board is elected by the membership. The idea of one member, one vote. Most trade associations operate where the executive committee is controlled by the largest contributors, and that's just not how the Organic Trade Association has ever functioned. Our bylaws are written in a way where this is, you know, this is the law of the trade association in terms of one member, one vote. And all of the member working groups that we gather to work on particular issues, whether it's a sector council or a task force addressing a policy issue, those are open to all the members. And again, it's the participation of the individual member companies. There's no waiting in terms of how we do that. And it's really proven to be a strength because you have all those voices at the table at the same time when you're making decisions. And our board is very diverse. You know, one of the other places where we're really different than you would find in a sort of typical trade association is because organic is all commodities, right? Yep. So we represent every commodity in agriculture, every point in the value chain. So the grower, the packer, the shipper, the handler, the certifier, the inspector, the retailer, you know, sort of all at the table together, and every commodity, dairy, fruit, veg, livestock, feed, minor ingredients that flow into packaged goods. And so that it's just diverse all around and set up for democratic voices. So, you know, a lot of times at first blush, folks will look at that and go, how could you ever get anything done? And, you know, I'll tell you in, you know, my dozen years at the trade association, it's so much more strength than it is a hindrance because we get to good decisions that way. And I think people really, really value it. It doesn't hang us up really at all in terms of the way that we do our work, but it creates a real opportunity for people to learn from each other, you know, by working that closely together.
I think it sounds great. And I think the thing is too, it seems to me that there's more for you to do from a staff standpoint, that you have to kind of make sure all the inputs are coming in. I mean, so that you have to do a little bit of upfront work about trying to get everybody get their things in on the table, because otherwise to expect that there's the equal initiative and energy and knowledge about advancing something to be considered. So you have to be scanning the horizon probably all the time, kind of looking at bringing those things and making sure that there's a broad base of the stuff that everybody needs to be grappling with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it helps to be an extrovert on the staff of the Organic Trade Association. We talk to a lot of people. This spring, obviously, with the pandemic and the shelter in place orders, we were, you know, obviously, paramount for us was understanding the impact to the membership and then making sure that we could translate what was happening in the industry and to our members, to policymakers as the bills were moving through Congress and USDA was setting policy. So, you know, we knew we had to weigh in officially with the Department of Agriculture, and I had the opportunity to provide unofficial testimony to a virtual listening session with the House Ag Committee on the topic and represent the industry. So, you know, really beginning in very early March, the staff started talking to members. And, you know, we've got good infrastructure. So we have a database and we record pretty much all of our interactions. So we have a repository of information to pull from. But we started talking to individual members and we must have spoken with, you know, 260 members, you know, within the matter of just a few weeks. And then we started seeing patterns. And then we went back and started engaging through our member communities, because as you can imagine, there's a lot of voices to hear from. And so, you know, we did a tour and had virtual sort of town halls with all of our sector councils. We met with our Farmers Advisory Council, our Dairy Council, our Grains, Oil Seeds and Pulses Council, our Retail Council, our Fiber Council, our Dietary Supplements Council, the Board of Directors, and then all of our task forces and other working groups, you know, engaged in different issues, and sort of collated all this information from the membership, hundreds and hundreds of members, and then we're able to sort of sort and sift and get a much better sense, because within organic, the minute you make a generalized statement, you're wrong somewhere, because it's such a diverse marketplace. And we are able to really sort of see the patterns about where the industry was thriving, where the challenges were, depending how long your supply chain was, depending how much, you know, shelf clout you had going in to the pantry loading that Americans went through, you know, in March and April. But, you know, it's a laborious process, but it's really valuable. But so over the course of, you know, 3-4 weeks, we were able to really sort of quickly wrap our minds around what was happening, you know, in the whole diversity of the industry. But, you know, that's just one example. We have to do our work that way all the time.
You know, when you were going through that list of the diversity that you have to address, it was a reminder you're not just food, that there are all things you were saying, supplements and clothes and you know, cotton, anything. I guess the thing that they have in common, that they all started off as something grown that was a plant or an animal or something. And then it goes through the process of being made into clothes or made into you know, food and supplements, which I never think about that.
Supplements, cosmetics, fiber products, absolutely. Pet food is sort of, you know, we put that in the non-food category as well. Yeah. And, you know, it starts with an agricultural commodity at its base, and that agricultural commodity is certified organic, you know, and then it goes from there. So,
well, you know, then one responsibility you've got for everybody is letting them know how it's going. And I know you did that at your meeting. You were explaining some results of research. What are some of the highlights that you've learned about how organic is doing in the midst of all of this?
Well, I think, you know, we did a number of things. We worked with some data partners and we did a quick supplement on the impact of COVID, but we also went out with a flash consumer poll in May to find out how families were thinking about organic in the midst of the shelter in place. So we had a lot of data points to work with, and I'll start with the consumer because it always starts and ends with the consumer. You know, I think of organic when you're talking about food, particularly, which is still about 95% of the market in organic. You know, organic is food for home. The organic sector has never had the kind of footprint or penetration in food service and restaurants as the food industry as a whole is. Like if you look at conventional food, half of the volume and purchases and consumption of food are away from the home in food service and restaurants, and half of it is through grocery stores. And the sort of balance of that within organic is very, very different. It's predominantly through grocery stores, and people generally consume organic in the home when they're preparing food. So during the shelter in place, people were all of a sudden eating 3 meals a day, 7 days a week in the home. So there was a huge, and has been, it's continued to maintain, surge in demand for organic products. So when people cook at home, they selectively choose organic, they can control the ingredients, and they eat a lot of organic in the home. So that was a major influence, you know, and we spoke with this 3,000 consumers in the flash poll. And we heard a lot of things from them, but one of the things we heard is that organic is more important than ever. 80% of the shoppers who completed our poll said that to us. And that there's also an element whenever there's an issue sort of directly related or indirectly related, if it's in that space of health and wellness, people want to eat organic food, right? So in the midst of the pandemic, not that anybody's out there, you know, claiming that organic, you know, cures COVID-19, but if you're thinking about your health and you're paying attention to it and you're wanting to support your immune system and, you know, high density nutritious food, people will select organic. And when that is on people's mind, they are gravitating to organic food. So we saw that as an influence as well. You know, we saw numbers, the market grew in 2019 for organic at about 5%. So, you know, healthy growth, but not the double digits that we've seen, you know, in prior years as the markets matured. But when you went into the first quarter of 2020, even the total for Q1, which would just be January, February, March, so really that's only 1 month of pantry loading, right? From when the shelter-in-place orders started to come in place in early March, the growth rates went for organic produce from 5% to 17%, and they've maintained that level now into June. Organic dairy went from 2% growth to 19% growth, and packaged goods from 3% to 21%. Organic frozen vegetables through the roof, you know, and this is with the challenges to keep product on the shelves. So, you know, our members that supply grocery stores with food, you know, have been having to really focus on two things. One is keeping their workforces safe, which is a huge challenge and a, you know, a values commitment that businesses are having to make right now. And number two is keep the product flowing because, you know, they've got customers on allocation. It hits the shelves, it's gone, it's out of stock. So it's starting to relieve itself a little bit now, but people are just buying much more food in the grocery store because they're eating all their meals at home. And when they do that, they choose organic. So even for myself, if I consume maybe, you know, 80% of my purchases in the grocery store organic, just for an example. But if I eat 25% of my meals away from home, those are meals I'm not eating organic. If I'm eating 100% of my meals at home and still even just maintaining the amount of organic that I purchase, you know, it's driving those numbers up. So, you know, we've seen, you know, a ton of that in terms of the types of products that go through distribution into the supermarkets.
Well, I have an idea for you. I think we need to work with those in-store shoppers because we've tried that a little bit. So we've actually used Instacart and some of the others. And you know, when they're shopping, sometimes they start texting back and forth to you and say, there isn't this and there isn't that. And I'm like, man, if we can just get enough of them, you could just say, be sure and say, wait a minute, I'm not seeing this one, but here's this organic one. Well, that'll do. And sometimes it's almost a little annoying because I'm getting bugged. Like I've had like 15 different texts back and forth because we got such a big order that we've ordered online.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, that little play between looking for an organic product or not an organic product. And I even chat with the deliveries sometime, and these people that are new at it, they kind of enjoy doing the shopping, and they like this job, and there's so many of them now that are doing these jobs. But it's just kind of interesting putting a shopper between you and that experience.
And a lot of people are having to go to a lot of backup choices because you're not always finding everything you're looking for in the store right now. You know, one of the questions we asked consumers in the flash poll was because, you know, in that first phase during the pandemic where there was so much pantry loading, people were really focusing on basics, you know, potatoes and cabbage because you knew they'd stick around in your kitchen for a while, and frozen vegetables and pastas and cans of tomatoes to make sauce and this kind of thing. And, you know, the distributors were having to really make sure the high volume goods were moving into the stores, and the co-packers and the manufacturers were having to put high volume products on the lines in order to really keep up with the volume surge. So there was a impact that constrained smaller entrepreneurial businesses, new product launches, things that just couldn't fit into the infrastructure during all the pantry loading. You know, the consumers that answered our poll said that they're still interested in experimenting and still looking for things. So the appetite is still there to sort of have all that variety. And we're going to have to see how that, you know, balance comes back into place as the economy starts to open up. And many entrepreneurial companies have had to find interesting ways to get right at the consumer in terms of their new products and supplying things. So, you know, like you were just saying, Roger, much more online shopping, but also going direct to the consumer through social media channels to launch and preview your new products that way, right? And smaller growers within the organic marketplace that have sort of shorter supply chains that sell regionally, that do sell into restaurants or farmers markets, had to quickly re-gear and get right at the consumer again, right? And open up, you know, farms were like immediately standing up CSAs and opening up subscriptions to their CSAs really quickly to, you know, to try to still continue to get at the consumer when, you know, their channels were really constrained.
I am so impressed of how quickly so many people have moved.
It's amazing.
And I'm trying them all. You know, I'm having deliveries and we're going to places that we could go pick up boxes and we're getting back to CSAs. And I just recently went back to the farmers markets and people were starting to get farmers markets wearing masks and, you know, being careful. And there's just so much creativity. And you know, one other thing, Laura, I think about is that not only are we in the midst of a pandemic and how weird that is and strange and stressful and so forth, but we also are in the middle of a recession, or not in the middle yet. We're probably in the front end of a recession. Yep. And historically, people have pulled back. And after the recession in 2008, or I guess they call that the Great Recession.
The Great Recession.
And organic slipped a little in. Anything that was kind of premium slipped. People were really, really kind of cutting corners and looking more on cost, but it came back. And it came. And so you have this overlay. I mean, you got a recession and a pandemic and marketing these products. So it would seem it's kind of a schizophrenic marketplace.
Well, you know, as you look ahead to the future, really we've identified sort of two currents to be watching, and it's really yet to be seen how they're going to interact with each other, which will sort of, you know, lead the way into the future. One is the heightened awareness of health and food at home, like we were talking about it, and that really supports consumption of organic food. The other is a protracted recession where folks are needing to be much more conscious about their spending and pocketbook issues and sort of, and which one of those themes is going to sort of overtake as we head into the end of 2020 and into 2021. And I think, you know, that's a crystal ball sort of speculation. We don't know, but we know that there are sort of two themes, one that draws people to organic and one maybe over the long term in a real protracted area will shift at least to a value proposition within organic being much more important than it would otherwise, and also to sort of suppressing engagement with organic products, you know, ultimately. In the Great Recession, you know, I think the GDP at that time in 2008, like went down as low in one quarter as like minus 15%. In 2009, which was the biggest year of impact on organic, the growth rate sunk down just below 5%. So the market never went negative like it did in a lot of areas, but it definitely, you know, going into the Great Recession, we were maintaining like high teens growth rates consistently. So there was a drop. That was also the time period when you saw a huge explosion in private label products within organic and value products within organic. And so people really shifted there, looking for affordable ways to keep organic in their kitchens. So, you know, I think we don't entirely know what the balance of 2020 will be. It will depend on this tension between people, you know, what we're hearing and thought leaders are thinking about is, you know, these habits of cooking more at home are going to stick with people. People are probably not going to go back to exactly the habits the way they are, even as we're opening up and we're starting to participate. Restaurants are going to have, you know, lower occupancy and maybe we're going to do it less, right? And we've all learned a little bit more about cooking with what's in the fridge and not getting hung up on not having the red pepper because you don't have the red pepper, right? So, you know, I think those trends will support organic. So, you know, we'll see the market's doing really well and is very resilient right now. But obviously a protracted recession is, you know, something that is, you know, a concern for everybody that's impacted by it.
Well, you know, as much as all these different approaches and are interesting, I'm so looking forward to getting back to restaurants. In fact, I was thinking, Laura, that podcast that we did together that I visited with you, we got a corner table at, was it the Assembly in Santa Cruz?
On Pacific in Santa Cruz.
Are they still open?
They're not open, you know, but there's a new place in there that does these really cool sort of high-end, wonderful ingredient tacos, Mexican food that's really fantastic. So we, you know, that would work too.
Yeah, well, we went there and we sat and had a great visit and ordered because I wanted to try their organic hamburgers. They said their organic beef that they had there was like the best on the West Coast or something. And I still remember the hamburger. It's funny. I mean, I almost forgot that we were going to talk this morning, but I remember what I had to eat 2.5 years ago, and yep. I can picture the table and the hamburger and the.
I think we shared some French fries too, Roger.
We did share from French fries. It was some funny flavored French fries. Isn't that great? The things that really matter. Well, and you know, some good friends of ours just reopened their restaurant last night, and I just got texted a picture. It was fine. The wait staff were wearing masks. They had the tables way, way spread out. They had, in fact, taken about half of them, and they were able to expand on the patio. The cities around the country are being pretty relaxed and saying, oh, go ahead and put tables out on the street.
I love. I think they just let people take over the sidewalks. I think that's brilliant, Roger, because, you know, people like to be outside anyways. And, you know, I feel for the restaurants that are, you know, working through the reopening because, you know, you have accountability and responsibility to your workforce. It takes a lot of constant care and vigilance to make sure you've got the protocols in place to keep people safe. You've got to spread out and serve fewer people. And it's just got to not be easy for all those entrepreneurs going through that process. Cause it's just, and for their workforce that are there serving, you know, customers, it can't be entirely comfortable no matter how,
You know, many precautions you've taken.
So I feel for those folks that are going through that. And I know I'm looking forward to getting back at it at a restaurant too. And so everybody's inching their way there.
The next time we do this, let's make it a point to try to meet at some restaurant and hopefully we'll be able to do podcasts from them. And one other thing about these restaurants is that they had so many reasons to just be down in the dumps, but so many of them, I think, everywhere in the country bounced back and said, hey, look, I think we can help feed everybody else. And high-end restaurants and all kinds of restaurants started making meals for kids that didn't have enough to eat because they weren't getting it from school, and for seniors and shut-ins and homeless and everything.
Yeah.
And they just switched gears, and all over the country, I am just so amazed and proud of the way they've stepped up. And now hopefully they can get back into what they would like to do and get their businesses going again.
Yeah, no, I completely concur with that, Roger. You know, we've been in awe of our membership and seeing the resilience. And in fact, at the annual meeting yesterday, every year at the annual meeting, we recognize a member of the year. And it's usually a staff-driven recommendation, and we present an award. And it's an individual that works for a member company or a member farm that really is engaged with us to sort of advocate for organic and step up. And this year, when we were thinking it through, you know, we took a step back and we ended up recognizing all of our members for their resilience in this and the creativity and the service to their communities. So, you know, it's just been amazing to watch how quickly people have adapted and done what they can.
You know, one other thing I wanted to go back on, though, and you talk about the opportunities that you still have in front of you, lots of opportunity. It's going well, you're growing and your opportunity. But I just saw another study. I think it was done by IFIC, which is a International Food Something Council, that they do. Theirs is much more general and broad. And what I thought was interesting was that I noticed specifically this morning why they said, well, they know that most consumers are concerned about sustainability. 63% of them said, but they're not sure about their food choices being sustainable. And knowing that I was going to be talking to you, I thought that continues to be part of your message with organic, that it's not just where everybody thinks about fertilizers and pesticides and everything like that, that they know aren't in organic. But the role and responsibility to the earth and soil based and regeneration is still a not understood, I guess, story for a lot of people. And they don't necessarily automatically put that at the top of the list for the connection with organic choices.
Yeah, you know, that's always been true historically. But I think, you know, one of the things that we were a pleasant surprise, not a total surprise, but so glad to see, we did a huge sort of omnibus consumer research project in 2019. And we did it in a way where we were able to slice the demographics, not only by age, but ethnicity and racial diversity, and understanding what draws people to organic. And I will tell you that the diversity of the shopper now and the young people coming into organic, this idea of choosing organic because of all of those wrapped sustainability aspirations has shot to the top of their choice set as it relates to organic in a way that we've never seen in the consumer data before. And really understanding the connection between how the food is grown and soil health and what that means for water quality and what that means for worker health in the field, and actually caring about these sort of more complex benefits of organic. It's really, you know, it makes me hopeful. Young people they really get it.
You know, Laura, you seem pretty enthusiastic about all this and for good reason. And it's nice that the day after you have an annual meeting, you're feeling this upbeat. And I think there's some people around the country that were in your meeting and got to participate in it that might not have in the past because they did have the opportunity. That's good. Now, people want to keep kind of sharing that enthusiasm and they want to know more about the organic industry and why organic. You've probably got a couple places that they can look. Could you explain where people could find more information?
Sure. We are affiliated with a nonprofit research organization called the Organic Center, and you can go to theorganiccenter.org, and they have a new website, so it's really easy to use, but it's a repository of all the latest science on the benefits of organic and growing organic. And so if you really want to dig in a little bit and get beyond scratching the surface and understanding some of these, you know, what we think of as ecosystem services benefits of organic, how does organic sequester carbon in the soil, these types of questions, go visit the Organic Center website. To learn about what we do, it's just OTA.com. So it's really easy. Our site's easy to go navigate. We've really upped our webinar presence since the pandemic, and we've lifted the paywall on all of our COVID-related content. So there's downloadable webinars that have been put on over the course of the last 3-4 months that are available to anybody to see, as well as all kinds of resources on the industry as well, and our data, our consumer work, et cetera. So OTA.com.
Well, Laura, it's great talking to you. And even though we aren't able to be sitting down and having an organic hamburger somewhere, you know, we'll do that again the next time. But I really want to congratulate you on the progress you made so far and have a successful virtual meeting in these days. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thanks for having me, Roger. And it's nice to get to visit with you as well.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.